What's up, Wisconsin? From the Inside Wisconsin Studios for the last time in Season 2, Episode 52. Trevor, John, happy March Madness. Did you fill out your bracket?
So, I don't really fill out a bracket.
Of course you don't.
I have to this year for work, but here's the reason I don't.
Yeah.
Is because I will pick Kansas to lose in the first round. Because I just refuse to pick them. And a couple of times, Bucknell, Bradley, that's worked out. But most often than not, that puts me behind the eight ball. So I'd rather just not do it. But when my first job when I was in Tulsa in the spring of 88, we send they do this and we pass them around and they post everybody's so that you can just update it on the wall. And because that was all you bookkeeped in 1988. And I had written on mine, just remember, as long as Kansas loses, we all win. do you remember who the 88 champ was?
No, I don't remember.
Danny and the Miracles, Kansas beat OU. So I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, Lord.
Small case came.
But you know what I do know? That you didn't pick the Badgers in that bracket.
No, and that sucks because every year I would at least fill one bracket out where the Badgers would be the winner just in case. It is going to happen. I promise. But this year, you read that? Marquette.
There you go.
So Brian Butch texts me and he's like, you are such a homer, right? Because I took our oldest son, Rhodey, to the Marquette game and then the Bucks game that night. And I posted a picture and Butch was like, you are such a homer. I said back to him, what part of inside Wisconsin doesn't scream homer to you? Of course I'm a homer.
Hello?
Yeah, duh.
I'm fine with that. We're with the teams that are from Wisconsin. Tell him if he would like to be considered. We need his team in the bracket.
Ooh, and Green Bay is better than Appleton. We got it. So I have Marquette winning.
I'm just saying it happens, but good for you. Good.
Thank you. What's your final four, Jay?
I don't have a bracket of what it is, but so don't pick all number ones.
Yeah, that's clear.
Somebody will lose along the way. I don't know. You know, where it is. I think there's about 12 teams that might be able to win, which is a little different this year.
True.
From what I looked, I was on a plane during the selection show, so I was trying to watch it on the plane. Some of the things, the seedings I don't understand. Like, if you talk about Buzz Williams' team, they're seeded seventh. And they came second. They weren't great in the non-conference schedule, but they were awesome in the SEC. Made to the title game, second in there, and they're like a six or seven. They're way down there. They're better than that. They've shown themselves. Like Tennessee has got a higher seed than them, and Tennessee was not even in the top, barely in the top half of the conference, cratered over all the things that they tell you they look at. Oh, we look at those last 10 games and really, you know, figure it out. Or, you know, we look at all these quad one wins. Well, if that's the case, as much as I dislike them, why isn't Kansas the number one seed? They had more quad one wins than anybody ever in the tournament, and they gave it to Alabama. So, I don't know. And I think I have to pick one for work this year. I've kind of been forced to it, but I'm not, I kind of just sit and enjoy it. I don't want to be a slave to the bracket. I will tell you this, people, you only get to fill out one. This idea that you say, I filled out one where Wisconsin wins. Okay. So which one of those is real? Are you sending in two tax returns? You're sending in three or four tax returns too, and just see which one.
No, geez, don't even put that out there. My goodness, no. Of course I'm not. I fill one out and then I review it just to make sure. The only reason I do this is because we do all four of us in the house do one together. Sure. I'm not in any pool. I pick homer teams. Listen, I even pick Missouri to go to the Elite Eight.
Well, that's just dumb. But okay, good.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Yeah. So
Do you know which school has gone to the most NCAA tournaments without ever going to the Final Four?
No.
Used to be Missouri. I think BYU last year passed us because they were in the tournament. We weren't. But nobody has been to more tournaments. And along with BYU, won more games without being to the Final Four. It's BYU and Missouri right there neck and neck. Yeah, my life in that regard since going to school in 1983, there has been nothing but crushing disappointment.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's bold.
That's how it is. But the second bracket you have there is not the house bracket. That's empty. So you can brag to people. Okay. Well, as long as you have one. Yeah. That's why I'm with Mike and Mike. You have the sheet of integrity. You can't You can't go, well, in my bracket where I picked the red teams, totally had Alabama winning. Well, in the ones where I pick, you know, homer teams where I have some connection, then I have Marquette and they won. No, you get a bracket.
I feel like Greeny has one and Mike Golick had like 40. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. I wonder, our guest today, no chance he fills out a bracket, but I'd be curious if he does. Ernie Johnson, Milwaukee native, and clearly he hosts Thursday and Friday, Saturday, Sunday, TBS, True TV, TNT. It is March Madness galore, and there's so much more that he's done.
Yeah.
And J.A., this is one of the most genuine people we will ever have on the show.
Yeah. Oh, in addition to the little NBA gig that he's got to take care of.
Yeah, inside the NBA, right?
Ernie Johnson is simply the nicest, classiest person you will meet in my business. And that is hands down. There are a lot of people that are nice. I like to think I'm a nice guy. I'm not Ernie Johnson nice. Right. And by the way, I don't think I even could make that emotional investment to try. You see some people like, I can't even be that nice. So to try would be really hard. I'm just going to try to be the best I can be because I can't be that great. But he was, several years ago, it's been 8 years since Stuart Scott passed. And when Stuart passed away, it's the only time I've gone to the Sports Emmys. We went down to New York and most everybody thought Stuart was going to win, both deservedly, but also there would have probably been a vote that this could be something posthumously that would be a great way to recognize Stuart and his career and his achievements and the tragic passing of him. So young, we were the same age. And, so we go down there and there's a whole room full of ESPN people. It's easier to get people to New York from Bristol than it is from Atlanta, where TNT and those people are. And so now here comes the outstanding sportscaster and they go through the whole thing and they open the envelope and the winner is Ernie Johnson. And he had won before. And so a deserving candidate in every way, but not sort of what we thought. And certainly in our hearts, not what we were hoping. And Ernie walked up to that deal and Stu's two daughters, Taylor and Sydney, were sitting in the first or second row. They were right there. And he got up there and he took that thing and he goes, this isn't mine. I don't deserve this. I have one of these, but this year I don't deserve this. And he invited Sydney and Taylor up on stage and he said, this is for your dad and you should have this. And he stepped back and let the girls speak and have their moment. And that was Ernie to a T. And if you were there, you would just know how genuine that was. That was not an ounce of show. That was not an act. That was not let's see how many goodwill points I could get. That was just Ernie Johnson in summary right there.
And you're about to see it face to face. This is one of the better episodes that we've ever done with one of the more genuine human beings, to Jay's point, that we will ever come across. This is a treat, Wisconsin. Here's Ernie Johnson on Inside Wisconsin.
Inside Wisconsin is brought to you by American Family Insurance, Aaron's Company, Blaine's Farm and Fleet, Capital Credit Union, Festival Foods, Quick Trip, Miller Lite, North Star Mohican Casino Resort, Prevea Health, and the University of Wisconsin-Platteville.
Hey, remember to subscribe on YouTube, leave a review, smash the like button, just get with us. I think Atlanta has stolen a few things of ours, and one of them is Ernie Johnson. EJ on Inside Wisconsin. Good to see you.
Man, it's great to be on with you guys. Thank you for having me.
Wow, that's a harsh characterization. Atlanta has stolen everything from us. My goodness. I was going to ask a little, I sometimes got to skew the first question because I had an idea of what I wanted to ask. Then I see this glorious jacket you're wearing, and
yes,
I got to know the story right there because it doesn't look like you got that off Fanatics yesterday.
No, this was it's been a strange time because we've had to go. We lost my mom about a month ago, and my dad died back in 2011, and so their house is filled with memorabilia and all kind of keepsakes and that kind of thing. So we've been going through there and hanging in one of the closets was the 1957 uniform of my dad from that championship year with the Braves. And so I got the entire uniform back there, including the stirrup socks. And this was his warm-up. So I said, hey, if I'm going to be on this wow. Wisconsin pod. I'm gonna dress the part. So there you go.
I feel like you've won the podcast over the last 2.5 years with that.
Yeah, he wins.
I can take no credit.
Close. But you got a whole mess of Georgia in you, obviously. Yeah. But wearing that, how much Wisconsin do you have in you?
I've always got a bunch of Wisconsin in me. I mean, that's where I was born. And so that's back in 1956. And we lived there till I was 8 or 9. You know, when the word came down that the Braves were moving from Milwaukee to Atlanta, and my dad was the PR director at the time and started doing some broadcasting for him, it was time to go. So that's those were my Milwaukee roots, right across the Wauwatosa line, Endress Park, 2745 North 68th Street. And so that's where we are. And it's funny, because I was talking to some folks over the weekend and when I was up there, and I said, it's funny how you go from when you're a kid, one of your best memories is, you know, like these mounds of snow, you know, and trudging up to Mother of Good Counsel School as I would walk to school. And now when you get to be 66, you're saying, oh, I hope there's no snow up there for this flight. I hope I don't have to deal with that. So that's, and luckily it missed us. So it was a great weekend.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you were just back home. We'll call it back home, winning an award, the Vince Lombardi Cancer Foundation Award of Excellence. And you just accepted that this past weekend on the floor of the Fiserv Forum, which is perfect for an NBA guy. Tell us what that experience was like.
It was tremendous. And, you know, look, as a kid, I'm growing up, I'm a Packer fan. And so obviously knew who Vince Lombardi was. And I found myself going down the entire roster of the Packers while I was speaking, you know, talking about Bart Starr and Jim Taylor and Ray Nitschke and Leroy Caffey and Boyd Dowler and Max McGee and Willie Wooden and Herb Adderley. And so again, so don't get me started. But it was really cool to have my name affixed to an honor like that, bearing the name of Vince Lombardi, who died of cancer, you know, many years ago and at a, you know, relatively young age of 57. And so, yeah, I just think it was a night where we kind of just try to encourage folks to continue the fight against cancer, to encourage folks who are going through it. And having been through it twice myself, it was a pretty poignant night.
I got invited to play in that golf tournament one time they had, and I was honored because I'm like, it had Vince Lombardi's name on it.
Yeah.
Right? Absurd. So you mentioned Vince passed away. You fought that twice. Obviously at ESPN with Stuart Scott and the Jimmy V Foundation. We raise all these dollars, and I'm very good friends with Norm Stewart, who started Coaches Versus Cancer. And he had said to me one time, he said, the numbers are too big. People talk about the millions they raise, or they talk about the millions affected. He goes, I find it's much easier to just go, if you know four people in your life, probably one of those people has had cancer. And that it's a very localized disease. But when you get that that diagnosis, when that doctor tells you something like that, because hopefully I never have to hear that. But what goes through your mind? What is the reaction when they, because they're, you know, that's not one of those jokey kind of things. They tell you the truth when that happens.
Yeah, it's sobering to say the least, and it puts you in this mind frame that you're not used to being in, where all of a sudden you're thinking about life and death, because you don't know exactly where it's going to take you. And I think one of the worst parts of it, at least early on, is just the uncertainty. It's when they say you have it and we need to do some more tests and let's see where it is and how we're going to go about fighting it. Those are the toughest times. Those, you know, a couple of days where you're waiting for a phone call and it really wears on you. But I think once you get the word and there's a plan in place, you just, you know, you put your head down and fight. And that's really the way it worked for me the first time back. And I got the word in 2003 that I had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, didn't really need to treat it. until 2006, and when I went through chemo and been in remission ever since. And then 2019, diagnosed with prostate cancer. And, you know, it was strange because my wife and I were sitting in the doctor's office that day, and having been through this many years before, and it was just like, okay, we just looked at each other and said, okay, here we go again. And how are we going to do it? And so, yeah, it's a sobering thing. And when I go back to 2003, I'm thinking, man, I've got kids, you know, I want to watch them get married. I want to be a grandfather and all these things. And that's when you're wondering, is that going to happen? And so, thankfully, here I am. It's 2023. I got 5 grandkids. Got a wife is good. And so, yeah, I think all we can do, and as I told folks on Friday night, is that when you're in this club that nobody wants to be in, there comes immense responsibility and opportunity to help the next person through it. And I think that's as survivors of it, that's what we do.
You're in a club, all right, and it's inspiring as all get out to watch the other club that you have, the brotherhood that is you and Shaq and Kenny and Charles inside the NBA. I mean, you have each other's backs like you grew up just down the street in Milwaukee from each other. So when you go through stuff like that, and we're going to cover other aspects of your life, EJ, with your permission, what's it like to have that brotherhood who may not be in that club, but boy, they sure are in your shoes?
I mean, yeah, I don't know the best way to describe it. I mean, I grew up with 2 older sisters, and these guys are as close as I'll ever come to having brothers. And how that all took shape, I can't explain all that. I really can't. You know, and people talk about chemistry and that kind of thing. I don't think there's a way to predict it, to tell you the truth. I think a lot of TV executives think they have the answer, and they're always trying to, well, this guy with this guy and this guy, this would be perfect. But John, you know too that, you know, you can see a lot of guys on post game interviews and features and that kind of thing and say, oh, that guy would be great on TV. And then the red light goes on and it's like, well, maybe he's not that good on TV. And so but with our guys, they're all just so natural and they're just themselves. That was my dad's best advice to me, you know, as he was a longtime broadcaster. He said, just be yourself. And so that's what we are. You know, you be yourself, you know your role, and then you kind of roll with it. And I think we've just been able to hit on something that fans have been able to connect with. I can't explain it, but yeah, we are a brotherhood there. And not to sound too corny, we love each other. We really do. And so we're there for each other. And we all know that we go through things, we all have, in the course of all our many years together, and we're just there to support one another and then clown on one another when the light goes on.
Yeah, believe me, I see lots of people in my building running around trying to figure out how that all works, right? But even listen, if the folks at your network try to do it again, right, you can't just go, okay, we need an Ernie type and we need a Kenny type and we need a this type, and then, oh, well, now it worked. Because none of it works that way. It's the same reason when I sit next to some person, whether it is about John Buccigross that I sit next to, and it just works better than some other people. It is crazy. But I find this amazing because this has brought probably the most attention that you've had in your career is this program, right?
Sure.
So, and for the longest time, not flashy doesn't usually get recognized, right? It's like, okay, that skill that's ever, but that guy's just not flashy and we're not making headlines. Do you ever find it ironic that you have come to this success and this recognition because of kind of the flair of the other people? And it shows that here's Ernie, like, oh wait, this guy's really good. And if you were on your own, that's not as recognized. But when we put these larger than life, just as you call them, just these goofballs around you, then suddenly they go, the real talent of this thing, the real glue of making this work is actually Ernie Johnson.
No, I don't know about that, but I know that
I do. Okay.
But I think, again, the important thing is knowing what your role on the show is. Look, these are the guys who played the game. Nobody cares what I think about what a team might be saying with 1.7 seconds to go in the huddle in a 1-point game. But these guys have all been there, so let's hear from them. Let's hear from them about the dynamic of a locker room in the middle of an 8-game losing streak, that kind of thing. So I'm just trying to get these guys where they can be their best, where their expertise can shine. And also knowing just from the prep that I do and the homework that I do, that if I bring up this quote from Coach X about how his team is playing, I know that Charles is going to jump on that. And when Charles jumps on that, I know Kenny's going to broadside him. So I'm kind of playing all this stuff out as I get ready to kind of, you know, steer the conversation. So I think that's part of it too, is I'm going to be kind of the guy who throws this out in hopes that there is a fender bender on the set. And so when people call me, you know, the traffic cop on the show, it's like I'm the rogue traffic cop who wants, wants the wrecks at his intersection. My role, I think, has been best described. I was on a show one time and somebody just said, you know what you are? You're the dad who's driving these guys cross country, turning around in the backseat saying, one more peep out of you and I'm turning this car around. So that's kind of, I guess that's my role.
Well, it is done well. It is done skillfully with these guys for sure when it comes through. That takes, though, some ego to you know, kind of step back from that and let them have that spotlight and not be afraid of who you are in that situation. But I want to go back and give people some inside working of how your job works when you say, I do all this prep. And I was been teaching a class with some sports guys at UMass the last 3 weeks. And I try to tell them that I use the old Vince Scully quote, right? The humility to prepare and the confidence to pull it off. And I said, so you're going to work your ass off. And then the thing's going to get done and you're going to, but wait, I have 90 or 80% of my material left that I haven't used, right?
Yeah.
So explain to people kind of, you do all this preparation and if those guys get going, like I've done a lot of work that just sits there. I dazzle my wife at the dinner table now with stuff that I didn't get to use. Yeah. Does that happen to you where you're like, you know, honey, yeah, by the way, the Magic's eighth guy on the roster is unbelievable.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I think the key to that is not trying to force it. Even though you show up for work and you've got like these saddlebags full of information and these great nuggets, if you try to force them in, it just doesn't work. And that's why it's so satisfying some nights when you're driving home from work. And I got like a 45-minute commute down from the studio to my home. It's like, man, I'm glad I went the extra mile on that because I was able to use it and it was in the flow of the show. And so I think you just got to realize that, yeah, you're going to have, you show up with 100 pounds of stuff and 95 pounds of it is going to go unused. But, you know, any other way of getting ready for a show, I wouldn't know how to do. I wouldn't just say, well, that'll never come up. Because I'm at the point now where I know just when I'm, you know, setting the scene for a game sometimes that Chuck is going to say, what's that mean? Or what do you, and then you have to do that next level. I knew you weren't going to know who this person is. So I need to explain that or where this place is, you know? So it's like the other day I was saying, you know, that the All-Star game is going to be, you know, it's going to be broadcast in 212 countries and territories. And I just thought, you know what? Somebody's going to say, well, how many countries are there? And that's the way our show works. So you find yourself having to go next level a lot of times. And especially for me, and when I was doing baseball play-by-play, I loved kind of diving into stories that, you know, you might see something in a media guide that says, this guy missed this season because he was hit in the jaw by a fastball, you know, okay. But then when you have a chance to sit down and talk to the guy before, you know, on the Saturday before the Sunday game and say, tell me about that, you know, what happened? And then there's this great story. And then you're just hoping the next day he gets in the game so you can share it. But but then that's one of those things where if he doesn't, you're not going to just in the flow of the game say, oh, by the way, you haven't seen this guy play today, but I get this great story. So you just that's just part of it. A lot of your best stuff is going to go unused, but sometimes it might pop up.
You can prepare all you want, but nothing prepares you for Shaq jumping into a Christmas tree. That wasn't on there. I know it wasn't. None of that. No. You can't prepare for that.
Look, in our production meetings, to which Shaq, Kenny, and Charles are not invited, which may sound strange in the TV business with all the production meetings you have and all the announcers sitting around it. Mm-hmm. But we don't want that. And they don't want to be there, number one. And number two is we don't want them there because we don't want them preparing for what we might have in store. And that's what I think has been one of the things about our show. It's just, I mean, it's an unrehearsed kind of sit down and fire away kind of thing. And so you got to think on your feet, but we don't want anybody sitting down and rehearsing segments, you know, and we've all seen enough shows where this guy talks and then this guy talks and this guy talked, and man, there wasn't a missed beat on the camera changes. And it's almost like they had rehearsed it. Yeah, because they had. So we don't want that. We just want to let her rip. And a lot of times whoever's yelling the loudest gets the floor. And when you're dealing with Shaq, who's the largest living entity that there is physically, but also the world's biggest kid, there are going to be times where, you know, he's going to be pushed. And I hate it when I do it. Why did I just do air quotes? That's horrible. But if he's going to be pushed / launch himself into a Christmas tree, that's just part of what happens with us. So, you know, look, Kenny's not going to be able to knock Shaq off his feet. But if Shaq says, you know, a little shove here and that will propel me as I launch myself into a Christmas tree. Yeah. You know, and that's amazing. The things that the next day that all anybody's talking about, we could have had a symposium. Sure. On world peace that night, but what everybody's talking about. Yeah. But did you see Shaq went into that tree? Yeah. Okay. That's
yeah.
That's the life we live.
Yes. It is the mayhem of what you got going. I just want to ask one more question about Charles, who I find just in the five or six crossings I've had with him, is unbelievable. I think mm-hmm. sometimes he's misunderstood. And hear me out on this, and that's it, right? He's totally forthright. He's totally unfiltered, and he speaks kind of like, I don't care what people say. But I don't think people realize he cares deeply what he does say. He may not care what the boss is, you know, okay, if somebody's good. But I do think he's really measured for as a guy as seems, you know, kind of like you said, as unfiltered. I don't know if you find that the same way, but I think sometimes people just go, oh, he doesn't care what he says. I think he cares deeply about what he's saying and what he means.
Oh, sure. No, absolutely. He doesn't just sit there and just fire away and say, hey, let's see how many hits this gets, or let's see if this goes viral. He has thought it all out. And he is truly a thoughtful guy who stays on top of current events, stays on top of everything happening in any sport in the sports world. And so, yeah, he's not just going to fire away. He's researched these things. He's not just going to go on and say something because everybody's talking about it. He's going to say what he believes. And to his credit, he's like, if you don't believe me, if you don't agree with me, that's fine. And that's why you hear him say a lot of times, again, my opinion, but he has opinions on everything. And they are based on how he has researched the topic. He's never going to weigh in on something unless he has studied it. And so, no, he's very thoughtful. And the thing is, he's very forthright in saying, I don't care if you understand that or agree with this or not. Mm-hmm. This is what I think. And what more can you want in our show than somebody who has an opinion and isn't afraid to share it?
We want more from you. That's what we want. We're going to get into it in segment two. With Milwaukee's own Ernie Johnson, back in a second, Inside Wisconsin.
Inside Wisconsin is brought to you by American Family Insurance, Aaron's Company, Blaine's Farm and Fleet, Capital Credit Union, Festival Foods, Quick Trip, Miller Lite, North Star Mohican Casino Resort, Prevea Health, and the University of Wisconsin-Platteville.
Hey, remember to subscribe on YouTube, leave a review, smash the like button, just get with us. J.A., I don't know if your boss gave you the heads up to go to the bar for Thursday and Friday, but I will be there about 2 feet away from a Miller Lite tapper. Look at
nice.
This. I got my own Miller Lite tapper. I literally bought the Miller Lite taps from Lambeau Field at the tent sale the other day. Came along with this. We'll see what I use it for.
So right now, but that's like having a key without a car. Okay. Fair. So until I see the keg, that's great. You know,
problem
you got a really
solved.
Expensive door handle.
Yep. Problem solved. All right. So I want you to settle this for me.
Yeah.
Lots of college basketball, lots of opportunity to sit and drink Miller Lite.
Yep.
You got to choose one. You walk into a bar here in Wisconsin, you're going to sit down for probably hours at a time. And the first question they're going to ask you is, When you order a Miller Lite, you want a can, tap, or bottle?
Yeah.
Which one?
Oddly enough, I actually have thoughts on this, which is probably not what you want to hear.
I do. Let's go.
Okay. I'm not a can. Can's fine, but that's third, easily.
Got it.
All right. So I don't mind a tap, but I want to know how long the stretch is. Okay. If it's way in the back, I want it short. The other part I don't like about the tap is every time they bring me, and I always have to tell them, I would like to keep this glass. And they're like, no, we'll bring you a new cold one. I'm like, no, I want this glass. The first time you brought it to me, it came full, so I feel like it's lucky. So I don't like to ever give up the glass once I start.
Yeah, I feel like it's lucky.
Yeah. So most easily, I want a bottle. Just give me the bottle. It's easier. Fair. It's there. Do you want a glass with that? No, I just want the bottle. But if I'm sitting there, if the tap is there, it's okay. It's colder than the bottle I'm in. But, yeah. The tap thing is not as easy as people think.
I agree. And leave some head on it. You're supposed to have like two fingers ahead on top of a tap beer, Wisconsin. Figure that out, would you? Miller Lite tastes great either way. Can, bottle, or a tap. Put some head on it. Light beer with flavor you love. That's what we call Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/InsideWisconsin, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. You think we can get a half barrel delivered?
I would think.
Worth the shot.
Volume. I mean, we got people that bring in water jugs every day. That guy can make a stop at your house.
That's fair. I'll try that. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. We almost had a disaster there. I almost tipped that beer over. Did you find it anywhere unique, or did you just stick with that liquor store you went to?
So this is the thing. I thought, wow, the ease and convenience of this as opposed to going to some of these other spots where I found it. Yeah, the liquor store, I think, might be the way to go from now on. Yeah, this is just, here it is.
No doubt.
Go with in, take fridge. A left, there's the cooler.
Love this sound. Beer. All right. It's for lunch, too. Between segments with our guy, Ernie Johnson, time for another top five list presented by the University of Wisconsin-Platteville. Make a smart investment and choose from 50 academic programs, including criminal justice, forensic investigation, and education. UW-Platteville's affordable cost means you'll graduate with less student debt and more opportunity. Find out more at uwplatt.edu. Less debt. I don't know why you wouldn't. Okay. Less debt.
I'll tell you why I can't. I'm 57. I'm not going back to school. Every time you read that, I'm like, okay, that's a great deal. That's awesome. But it's not enough to entice me to get some sort of graduate degree. I'm out. Okay. Sounds good, but I'll be honest. I feel like I've passed the threshold for which I should apply.
A little less for you, probably more for the kids coming out of high school. That's fair. All right, top five list.
Yes,
March Madness. I wanted to know. You and I do this thing called 3 degrees of cheese. 3 degrees of cheese. Often it doesn't make the show. There was one night when I was texting you, rattling off random people, and you're like, what am I, a carnival game now? I mean, that was kind of fun. There are five head coaches in the NCAA tournament, men's and women's.
Yep.
Five head coaches that are from Wisconsin. Can you name all five? Bonus points if you know where they're from. Here we go.
So, first off, I say this a couple to you. Games. Say this to you and to the viewing audience. I'm insulted that he thinks that this is somehow going to, this is worthy of even my time.
Just once I would like to do something. Okay.
So obviously a friend of the program, Shaka Smart.
Shaka Smart. Right? And he is from?
He's just from Madison. Okay. Listen, if I have to go into these little towns where he's from Madison.
Okay.
Right.
He's from Madison. You're right.
Then the other one that's just the gimme is Tony Bennett.
Yep. And he's from?
Well, it depends. Obviously, he's a Stevens Point kid growing up. But he's a Green Bay Preble grad.
And where is he born? This is like from on the Wikipedia says this is where they're born. Any idea?
So we're getting our information from Wikipedia. Okay, awesome.
Pretty much. is that wrong?
It's not what
he's a Clintonville trucker. He's a trucker. Don't you remember Dick Bennett talking about that?
So anyway. But he's a Green Bay Preble grad, which is okay. As long as he didn't go to West, I can root for the guy.
Yeah, you can.
You know, Preble is harmless when he's out there. So that becomes it. Then the next one I think is easiest is the fella over there at Iowa State.
TJ Otzelberger.
See, I was going to call him Oglethorpe or whatever it is. Yeah, yeah, I just know it's a very hard name to pronounce, and he's won a bunch of games. You know, he got in there, and they stunk out loud when he took over the first year, but they managed to come back, do really well. Don't get mad at me, fans of the Clonies and people at Ames, because I think they're a little overseeded. Mm. They haven't been great over the last dozen or so games, but so, yeah, TJ, he's a Milwaukee kid.
Yeah, he is. Damn it.
When he comes through. Right. The one that people miss, but only because he's the number one overall seed in the tournament. And as you know, as sort of an SEC, keeping an eye on the SEC, Nate Oates, head of the Alabama program, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I did not, in all honesty for the people that are watching, he's from Watertown. I did not know that. But the bald-headed fell on this show. If you're wondering which one might have let the cat out of the bag.
Yeah, made a mistake and said that out loud before I told you.
One of the coaches is from Watertown. I'm going to ask you who they are and where they're from. So, you know, one of them, you know, some are easy because
I wonder why I'm bad at this.
And he goes, and, you know, there's the one from Watertown. Okay, great. So I did not know that, but now I do that Nate Oates is from Watertown.
4 for 4.
And although he's got some issues with Alabama, that program. Yeah. He's run into some stuff, and he hasn't handled it super well publicly. But I don't know that that kind of crisis training is what you get while you're working on X's and O's. And hopefully he will kind of get everything settled there, and he will speak well on behalf of his program throughout this tournament, because there's some issues down there in Tuscaloosa. Yeah. And then the fifth one.
Mm-hmm. No, this is it. This is where I might get you. This is I'm excited for.
So the fifth one, because we got other coaches, right? We could go with Buzz Williams.
Yeah, not from Wisconsin.
And Bruce Pearl, who was at UW Milwaukee. So those guys kind of are tacitly there, right?
You're going to know this. You're going to.
Okay, I'm going to go off the board. Because I'm in Connecticut. UConn, right? We are in. At UConn, all we care about, even though when the men's win title, we're all about our girls.
Mm.
Can I go to the women's bracket?
Sure. Come on over.
It's West Virginia. It's West Virginia.
Yes, it is.
West Virginia. Every mountaineer. Come all you old grads. Come join us, young lads. Do you need the rest of the fight song?
No. Are you serious? How?
Fight song.
How?
Have you never been to Morgantown?
No.
Big Hill.
Have you?
By the way,
you live there.
This is another one like Otzelberger. Dawn
Plitzewhite.
Do I have to spell it? Because I'd rather spell Anta Tecumpo.
That's the only thing you're going to get wrong. Where's she from?
Dawn Plitzewhite. She was at. So she coached for Borseth. Their GB.
Yep. Assistant Borseth. Yep.
She's from West Bend.
Sut.
There you go.
Okay, it's good.
Can I give you my best tournament? The one that I'm watching, though, because I'm still, even though I love the Badgers and everything, I'm a Mizzou grad, and our man DeAndre Golston, great player, grad transfer from UW Milwaukee. He's one of our starters, one of our top three. So we've got a little taste of the Panthers with us there in. So he's a Panther and a Tiger. He's as long as it's a jungle cat, the guy's in. But he's been really, really good on that team that's had a huge turnaround. I mean, they went from stinking out loud offensively to I think they're underseeded.
Shocker.
Underseeded. But so that's what I know.
Everything. You know everything.
I don't know everything. I know something.
A lot. Well, I cannot find something that you don't know. I'll keep trying.
I can't name the last three presidents.
Great. All right, back to Ernie. Let's talk some March Madness. We are back inside Wisconsin. Trevor Thomas, John Anderson, and Milwaukee's own Ernie Johnson from TNT, TBS, Inside the NBA, and like a slew of a whole bunch of other stuff. Let's be real. There's nothing that you haven't done in your career, Ernie, except there's one thing that I think must stand out. I think it's 93-96. You called Brave games with your dad. So many few people get to say that. What was that like?
It was frightening, number one, because by that point, you know, my dad had been doing Braves games forever and was just beloved by Braves fans. And so they come to Sports South, a regional cable in Atlanta came to me and said, hey, would you kind of came to both of us, would you like to do some games with your dad? And I know you can't, you know, because of your schedule with TNT and TBS, et cetera, work them all in. But how about a game a week when you can do it? And so I jumped all over it. And for a guy who hadn't done play-by-play since college, you know, I did some Georgia baseball play-by-play after they cut me, which is another story in itself. As I tell folks, because I wanted to do what my dad did. I wanted to be a baseball player. And so I walked on as a freshman at the University of Georgia, made the team, and then was told to walk off as a sophomore. So that was the end of my collegiate playing days, but I did have that one glorious season wearing the red and black of the Bulldogs. And I remember the coach who cut me as I'm preparing to start doing play-by-play for the college radio station. He was like, hey, I would hope nothing that has happened between us in the past would affect. I said, look, I'm a pro, and, you know, even though I wasn't really a pro, but I said, I'm going to be a pro. I'm not going to say, oh, boy, what was he thinking here? You know, that was what a terrible time for a pitching changer. How could he hit and run there? I didn't do that, but so to be able to, you know, work shoulder to shoulder with my dad, you know, you're in a press box, you're in a ballpark, it's a beautiful day, and you're calling baseball with your dad. It was the best. And all I wanted to do was be good enough at it that he didn't just walk out of the booth one day and never come back. You know, I didn't want to hasten his retirement, but we had a great time. And you know what some of the best times were? Was spring training. You know, those were some great times where you wake up early in the morning. At that point, the Braves were still in West Palm. You know, we get up on a Saturday morning, and Dad would drive, and here we are drinking coffee, going to Kissimmee to call a spring training game that afternoon, and it was rich, man. Those were, and I've said, and this is no kidding. I mean, as much fun as I have working with Kenny and Charles and Shaq, and think of all the folks I've had a chance to work with through the years, nothing will match, you know, working with my old man.
Mm-hmm. He was a really good pitcher for the Braves when they were in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
But it kind of gets, it's easy to get overshadowed on that team because, you know, Warren Spahn was really good and Henry Aaron was really good.
And Lou Burdette wasn't bad.
Lou Burdette was fine. He managed to win three games in that World Series in 57 when he came through too. So, by the way, that's really good when you, like, some people go out, but they've never won a, my team's never won a championship in my lifetime. And you were like one. Like, yeah. I get you couldn't appreciate it, but you were there. I want to know, because of the Braves Association and then in Atlanta, how well did you know Hank Aaron?
Fairly well. I mean, as a kid, you know, because I mean, crazy. I'm going to the ballpark tagging along with my dad, and you know, because he's doing games, and his, you know, he had a game day routine, you know, and that's where I picked up mine. Here's how you prepare. But you know, we get down to the ballpark so early. You know, I'm walking around the clubhouse, just kind of hanging out. You know, you know, and Hank Aaron, and I'm at the cage watching Hank Aaron take swings, and he's asking me how my little league team's doing. You know, it's like, come on, man. And I should probably show you something. Is it cool for me to get up from the desk here for one
Go
second? Okay, hold on.
Yeah.
Talk among yourselves while I'm gone.
What do you
I'm
have right there, here. Trev?
I was going to show him a signed baseball by Hank Aaron, but I have a bad feeling that whatever he's about to grab is going to make this look dumb.
Right. You might want to just set that there as a paperweight for the moment and see what happens.
No, but those are really, I've got the same thing. And again, along the lines of going through all the stuff at my folks' house. So this is a game used Aaron bat. Yeah. And my dad said, I'm going to get Henry to sign this. And then he said, he's asked all the time, you know, to sign stuff. So I'm not going to do it, but you can see remnants of pine tar on here, the 44 on the handle, the whole bit. And so, I mean, and here's another thing for you. Look, my dad was a relief pitcher, and as he always said, not good enough to start, not good enough to finish. He was a middle reliever, but you always see guys, you know, they get the final out or something like that, and they get the ball. My dad kept those, and he would write on them. And so, like 1954, this is a 1954 baseball, and I'm probably doing a terrible job, but it's 1954, and he's got it written on here. Braves 13, Cubs 2, fifth win, complete game. It was his only complete game as a Brave. He had a couple as a Milwaukee Brave. He had a couple with the Boston Braves, but it was Labor Day, 8 hits. So there's a bag full of these baseballs. And so, I mean, I can just sit there and just, you kind of soak in that. And it's, you know, it's really cool.
Yeah. Wow.
What was the question? Did that answer the question? I have no idea.
Yeah, okay. You know, it's funny. You say Hank Aaron, and I heard you with your dad, he said Henry, because there's a distinction to some people of kind of how well you knew him or where you were between people who called him Hank and called him Henry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, but both, you know, and for me, the last, you know, when I asked him to be part of when my dad retired, I did a video. And on that day, it was Mr. Aaron. Would you be part of this? And he met me at the ballpark, and we did an interview. And he was, you know, was talking about my dad calling home runs and that kind of thing. Because it was strange, is that my dad only got to do at this point in his career, early on when most of the games were on radio, very few on TV. Mm-hmm. He only did play by play in the third and the seventh inning, and then he was analyzing the rest of the time. And strangely enough, his former teammate, Henry Aaron, hit number 500, 600, and 700, all in either the third or the seventh inning. It was unbelievable.
Because you rub elbows with these people, and you talk about going with your dad every day. So at what point, maybe it was right away, did you realize Henry Aaron was really, he was Henry Aaron. He wasn't just a ball player. Like, did you know that early on, like, that's baseball royalty?
Sure. I mean, okay. I think... And especially during the chase, you know, when everybody was, you know, when you start getting to 500, 600, 700 home runs and that kind of thing. Yeah. You realize that this is, you're seeing somebody who's incredibly special in the history of the entire game. So, yeah, but he never acted that way. He was right. He was just a guy. I mean, that was
like when you were 8, did you like, oh, there's Hank Aaron? Or did you go, wow, there's 8. That's Hank Aaron.
Yeah. I don't know what I was doing really when I was 8. I don't know if anything made a whole lot of sense.
Well, you were moving the damn franchise is what you were doing,
yeah.
By the way.
Yeah, but you know what? Yeah, exactly. But you know, it was the funny things that stand out about those days when you're just kind of hanging out in the clubhouse and that kind of thing and trying not to be too awkward is this stuff you saw, you know, and you'd see some guy walking back smoking a cigarette and it was like, oh, hold on. I'm in a big league clubhouse and somebody's got a heater going. What's going on? I didn't think that was supposed to happen. Thought they were all supposed to be walking around here drinking milkshakes and doing push-ups. But no, that wasn't it was a little eye-opening for me, to tell you the truth.
We talk about Gorman Thomas or the Braves, because I'm pretty sure that stuck with Milwaukee for quite some time.
No, I'm telling you, one of these things. I'll say this: I'm like, it's amazing the things that stick out in your life that you'll never forget. And so, one of those things was, remember Bob Tillman, big barrel-chested catcher from years and years ago. And I'm just sitting here minding my own business, and here comes Bob Tillman with just his shower shoes and no towel singing Heat Wave. And I'll never forget that for some reason, as hard as I try. And so there are certain images from the clubhouse when you're a kid that you just kind of like to forget. But anytime the song Heat Wave comes on, I picture Bob Tillman naked.
Oh my.
Oh man.
I'm all sorry. Right, so, hey, it was okay. good being with you today. Sorry.
Yeah.
No, we're going to keep this going. All right. So go back then. You're a kid. You're in Milwaukee. You live there till 8 or 9 years old. And my understanding is you kind of develop a personality by 7. So Wisconsin should take credit for everything that is Ernie Johnson, because by 7, you were set. I was watching that video when you came home 3-4 years ago where you went back to your old neighborhood, Hadley and 68th. I didn't know how close this was, but my dad, born in 1954, grew up on 42nd and Fairmount. like literally right up the road from you. And when you came home and saw that house in the same way, how much of your childhood memories then came just flooding back from your time in Wisconsin?
No, I mean, that's exactly the perfect way to put it. And I had seen the house a couple of times also because I'd gone up to do Brewers games for TBS, and I would try to make a point of going to the old neighborhood. When I'd gone to Whistling Straits for a couple of PGA championships, I'd stop there or, you know, at least go through the neighborhood on the way home. And so it was but that night was so special because it was just a beautiful spring night. Shaq and Charles came out to, you know, we had talked to the neighbors and said, hey, we'd like to go out there and have kind of a get together with, you know, some brats and some hot dogs. And this, the neighbors came out from their houses, and it was just this wonderful couple hours where folks just in the whole neighborhood all gathered in my old front yard. And everything looked the same. I mean, the folks there invited me back in the houses, and I said, yeah, let me go see my old bedroom. Here's where we used to watch TV. Now, here's where my dad would drink a Blatz and watch this, you know? And so it was a rich, rich night and just good for the soul.
Listen, the way you ripped off the cross streets, and I feel like you're still getting mail there sometimes, which is great. doing Major League Baseball is amazing, and PGAs is amazing, and inside the NBA is a sexy show. Like, all this stuff is great. Tell people something fun about working in places like Macon and Spartanburg, because we all have those in our resume.
I know you do, too.
They're the most fun times you have, so I don't know.
No, I mean, and I've heard you on the air reference the Drillers, and you never forget those times because you learn something at every stop. And that's, you know, like Macon is your first TV job. There were things, you know, all the things that happen in your career, I mean, they happen first in places like that where videotape isn't ready, where, you know, I got out of the University of Georgia, Grady College of Journalism and Mass Communications, I might add, one of the best in the country. And I know as a Missouri guy, you're going to say, yeah, but don't forget. And there are a lot of great J schools. So, you know, our big thing there was, look, if you're a news person, you want nothing to do with it. You can't do any advertising. You can't any of that. So my first job in Macon, I'm anchoring the news, but at the same time, I'm doing commercials. You know, and I went to the news director. Here's this kid who looks like he can't even shave yet. I look like I'm 12 years old, and they hire me to anchor the news. And I said, I know you've got me down here to do these commercials, but no, I'm the news anchor. He says, we do not have we don't have the budget to hire a separate news anchor and commercial man. So you'll go do these. And so when the news would run, you know, I'd be talking about this serious situation here, and the investigation continues, and 13 News will continue after this. And then I'm in a plaid shirt, and I'm walking through like a W Supply saying, the window and door shop at W Supply has all your needs for this fall. You know, or I'm selling cars at Barney A. Smith Lincoln Mercury in the middle of the news. And so it was an eye-opening experience for a guy who had just gotten out of journalism school and was taught, no, you, just for your credibility's sake, you can't do any of that stuff. And no, here I was right in the middle of it. And one of my favorites was Tommy's Recaps, you know, that would fix your, if you didn't want to get new tires, you go to the recap place. They save dollars, and that makes sense. I would deliver that so people were just making tracks to Tommy's Recaps after seeing that spot.
I assume that's when you won your first Emmy. That was it. That was for that commercial.
There were six for that.
Oh,
there were six Emmys just for that. Barney A. Smith, three of them, and then Tommy's Recaps, two. Yeah.
John does this to me. Look what's behind him. Oh, there's a couple Emmys. And I know you got three Emmys, but you probably only have two of them on you. That's a cool story, by the way. I have a Pinewood Derby car trophy. I mean, that's that's it.
That's all nice. Right. I made one of those. I did that for the Cub Scouts in Milwaukee. Yeah, we had. In fact, my dad made the car. I mean, I was like their supervising, and I think we won an Emmy for that too.
Those are literally out there just so I control Trevor. Otherwise, I honestly, yeah. I think they were in a closet somewhere for a long time to have the kids, because they really don't, like, you can't really spend them at the grocery store or anything. You know, like, they don't.
Well, have you tried?
Yeah. Yeah, I did, actually. Yeah. I did. I went down to the Stop and Shop. You know? What do you mean I can't get this sliced thin? When we go 3 years ago? But yeah,
that's a good way to end segment two. Yeah, and that's where it all began. All right, we'll come back, wrap it up with Ernie Johnson in just a second. We are back in 2 minutes. Inside Wisconsin.
Inside Wisconsin is brought to you by American Family Insurance, Aaron's Company, Blaine's Farm and Fleet, Capital Credit Union, Festival Foods, Quick Trip, Miller Lite, North Star Mohican Casino Resort, Prevea Health, and the University of Wisconsin-Platteville.
Hey, remember to subscribe on YouTube, leave a review, smash the like button, just get with us. So we're talking March Madness, and we're talking about going to the bar, but there's a lot of people that don't do that. They invite people over to the house to watch the games, right? They have a house party. Got a text from my buddy V that says, hey, speaking of trash talking, I'm opening up the garage on Friday to watch the NCAA games. Anybody's welcome after 3. I'll have wings and beer.
After 3.
Yeah, which is a little 4 hours late. I wasn't going to say that. I'll probably stop by at like 3:01. But yeah, so in the garage, at least three TVs. I'm sure he's going to bring one out. He's got wings and beer. You and I have done this chat more than once.
Yeah.
Got to have wings. Got to have beer. What do I go to Festival Foods and grab to bring to this thing? Like, what do I bring? I don't know what to bring.
Cheese.
Why is that right? Not obvious to me? Yes. Right.
Are we not going to do that? You know, I'll do this. I will tell you this. I did this when we had folks over on Championship Sunday. But I only bring this up because it's never a bad option. It's kind of like prayer. It's never a bad option. A nice summer sausage goes a long way, which is a little bit more. The crowd you will be at will not look at that sideways, where some of the folks are on place. I'm like, no, it's eat it. Well, no, peel the thing off at first, then eat it. But you
know. Ritz, gotta have the Ritz. So, all right, cheese and sausage. Quick question. At Festival Foods, they have.
And you do need a cracker to go with that.
Yes, got to have a Ritz cracker. So at Festival, they have the normal cheese, like cheddar and Colby and all that, and pepper jack. Yeah. Obviously, the Ritz crackers in aisle 2 or 3. Can you tell I spent some time there? Summer sausage in the back by the meat counter. However, they do have, just beyond produce in most stores, this like super awesome cheese section. I don't even know what it's called.
The fancy cheese section.
Fancy cheese, yeah. So what do I take to... No, not the fancy cheese? Just
I don't know that brie or a good blue cheese or some of these other things. I mean, it looks nice on your charcuterie board, but I just don't think of the NCAA tournament as that kind of a thing. Not I don't want any... Board. I don't need any, you know, wild mustard seed kind of mash and honey and... Just don't overthink this, right?
Yeah, got it.
Be like the coach at the tournament. Let's just be who we are to get here. We don't have to change a lot because we're here, okay? So we're not. We don't need. Let's not be reinventing who we are. I don't see you as a brie, gouda, kind of. You know, no. Let's just go. I'm with you. Here's nice sharp cheddar. Honestly, if you want to get me a nice what is it? The Kakana. Spreadable.
Oh yeah.
Bring me some of that. You know, there's a mouthful of that.
Port wine cheese dip. Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, go there. Yeah, if you want to get some with the wine, that's even fine too. But yeah,
I like it. All right, Festival Foods has the regular cheese, the summer sausage, even the port wine cheese and the Ritz. But they do have this fancy cheese section. If you want to make up this charcuterie board,
charcuterie.
Go to Festival Foods. They have it all there for you. Visit them online, festfoods.com.
Like, I understand you do all the work on this show behind the scenes, but I do feel like I'm tired of carrying you in some of this.
Love you, too.
So you're an adult now. We need you to start making some decisions.
Thanks, Dad. And
smart decisions.
Okay. I want it. We're back. Segment 3. Trevor Thomas. That's John Anderson. And that is Ernie Johnson with TNT, TBS, and True TV, and all sorts of March Madness coverage coming up. How was that, EJ, when you spent so much of your career doing all sorts of stuff? And, oh, by the way, now we're going to have you anchor March Madness.
Oh, it's awesome. Look, everybody loves the tournament. And, you know, I think one of the most difficult things was always trying to find the time to watch it. You know, because if you were so busy doing whatever else you had going on. Yeah. But now to be able to, as you say, you know, CBS, TBS, TNT, True TV. If somebody told you, if your boss said, hey, all I want you to do on this Thursday and Friday is watch the tournament, you'd probably sign up for that. And even though the shows are ridiculous, because when you're doing that, you're hopping around from doing a pregame on TBS, and now it's halftime on TNT. Oh, by the way, stand by, you got to do it between games on True TV. I mean, that's what it is all day, but it's awesome. And you know, I'm always been a huge fan of the tournament, and for us to have had a piece of it for the last dozen years, I guess, or so, it's been tremendous.
So there's one other thing in regards to this whole Atlanta TBS Wisconsin trade-off thing. Like, we understand the Braves moving to Atlanta, you followed at 8. I'm not going to lie, I can't quite forgive your company for stealing Brian Anderson from us, though. Like, that's it. Can we be done now? Well, BA is there a lot, and he's barely ever here. We miss him. I'm just, maybe that's my way of saying, I don't know, I'm pissed about it. That's maybe what this.
I have Brian, and they don't get any better than Brian Anderson, and I have told him, I said, when it's all said and done, by the time your career is over, you will go down as one of the best voices baseball has ever known. He's that good. And so I love working with him. He's, and you know, he's just a good guy. And he's able to do everything and do it with just with class, do it. He has a perfect voice, play-by-play voice. And he's tremendous. So if you miss him when one of those times where he's not able to do Milwaukee games, I can understand that, because he's such a comfortable listen and a comfortable watch. And he's just exceptional.
That's why.
Yeah. You should be named Anderson. Hey, is that your brother? Do you know him? No. That's good. Fine. Whatever. Fine. Be that way. It's a common name. It's terrible when it goes through. So,
EJ, it takes about 2 seconds to do any type of research on you and your career and your life to see some of these speeches now that you travel the country giving about your son, Michael, and how much he meant to you and your family, and now how you're leaving his legacy. Even though he's gone, can you tell us just about the impact that Michael had on your life and how you're seeing now his impact on other people's lives?
Yeah, it's been pretty remarkable. And it's something that, I've been married for 40 years to Cheryl Ann, and we adopted Michael from an orphanage in Romania when he was almost 3 years old. And one thing Cheryl and I have always agreed on is that he will impact more folks through his life than we ever will, because he was a special needs kid who basically was unable to walk, talk, do anything when we adopted him, and then he started speaking when he was 8, and then wouldn't stop. And even though his communication wasn't great, he had some autistic traits to him. He had like a Rain Man mentality, a memory of cars and that kind of thing. And so if you tell him what you drive, that's how he would remember you. You know, when I'd run into teachers of his 10 years after he had been in their class, and he would see this person coming, you know, like down at the mall, and he'd say, Michael, do you remember me? And he'd say, Chevrolet Astrovan, blue interior, you know, and it would blow them away. And so, his spirit was such, it was so innocent and so, just so wholesome. Folks were just attracted to him. And so, look, when he's in high school there's a high school coach who puts him on the basketball team because he said, I just want Michael to teach my players maximum effort, because I know he's in a wheelchair and takes all the strength he has to get around, and having a heart for others, because Michael's favorite thing to say was love you too. And so this coach, Phil Bollier, when he's teaching his classes, he would like hesitate or take a little break from teaching and say, hey, look, I'm going to tell you about this kid, Michael Johnson. And he would talk about this love you too that Michael always used to say. And so he started teaching his students how to say I love you in sign language. And so, like, you know, he puts Michael on the basketball team, and on senior night after 3 years of doing this, you know, they go out and the folks are cheering for all the seniors. And then when Michael's introduced, I look up in the student section and they're all standing like this. And so it's like, you know, to me it was, you know, I'm not trying to turn this into Sunrise Sermonette, but like, only God takes a basketball coach from Indiana, transplants him in Braselton, Georgia, and takes an orphan from Romania and they put these guys in the gym and they teach this school about love, you know? And so that has really been, since we lost Michael about 15, 16 months ago at the age of 33, and he lived so much longer than a lot of folks with muscular dystrophy do in the last 10 years of his life on a ventilator. We've just shared his message and tried to tell folks that there's value in everybody and that it may not be visible right from the outset. You may look at somebody and say, well, I don't know where the value is, but there is. And so that's kind of like been the crux of the message that I deliver. And that's one of the things I love most is just going to speak to groups and speaking to businesses and saying that, you know, there's more to life than the next conference call you've got and the next meeting that you've got and that kind of thing. So that kind of in a nutshell is why much of what I do when I speak and give these 45-minute, you know, presentations about life itself and not sports casting is that the messages and the lessons that Michael has taught us through 33 unbelievable years.
Right. So this is I love you and this.
Yeah. Love you too. Yeah. Here's the I love you. Yeah. And you tip the index finger at the other person means love you too. So, we're just spreading that wherever we can.
It's amazing for all the grand gestures people make or the large donate, all these other things, how sometimes it's the smallest and the simplest things that grow and make those kind of impacts. It's a marvelous, marvelous story. And I remember the night we did your story on SportsCenter with this. And a lot of times we tape those, you know, tape the lead in so we can do other things. That was one that I went back into my office and said, okay, I'm going to wait till the show, till this actually comes on to see it. And it's an amazing story. You can find it everywhere. And I hope people look that up and see that and kind of even through the interwebs, try to push the message out even more.
I appreciate that. Thank you, guys. Thank you much for that.
Let me fire off some of this nonsense at you and see what happens.
This is the part of the thing I'm scared of, man.
No, I
hate these rapid fire things because I'm not a rapid fire guy.
Well, hopefully
you can edit this.
Hopefully the idea is these are things you know, right? Like these aren't trivia questions to make you go, oh, do you know this? There might be one of them. Okay. But like, first off, this is very simple. I just want to know, what's the story behind the bow tie?
We were having a Christmas party about 10 years ago, Cheryl Ann and I. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go wear a bow tie. So I got a Christmas bow tie. I had, you know, reindeer or something on it. And it took me like 3 hours watching a YouTube video to try to tie the thing because it always got, I said, okay, that's good. I'm good to there. And now what do you mean poke this behind that? And so it took Cheryl like 5 minutes to say, no, do this. So I just kind of liked it. And then I went out and bought a couple more. And I was kind of mixing them in here and there. And then I just started wearing them all the time. And I do not have I don't have a regular tie anymore. Those are all given away. And so all I've got now is bow ties, about 90 of them.
Wow. See?
There you go.
It's very easy. True or false, you're younger than Julio Franco.
I don't know. I think I'd still say I'm older. I don't think Julio Franco is 66.
But only by 2 years. And I think he quit like 2 years ago. So that's always crazy. I don't know if Trevor knows who Julio Franco is. Give me your favorite ball player as a kid.
Joe Adcock. That's off the top rope for you. Yeah. Braves first baseman. For some reason, he was just my favorite guy.
Mm-hmm. I like that. UGA cranks out golfers like crazy. Like, you got tons of them. How's your golf game?
It could be better. But it's not, you know, it's not bad for a guy who absolutely, I put the sticks away for years, you know, you know, just because I couldn't keep it in play and it was miserable and it made me miserable to go out and play. And then I had a buddy of mine, John Lott, who's a one of the teaching pros up here at where I live in Braselton at Chateau Alain. And he and I spent a little time on the range, and he simplified things for me. And I went out and played, and the ball was in play, and I loved it. And I love playing. I love playing with my son. I love playing with my dad. So, yeah, I'm back in it, but I'm not very good. I'm double-digit handicap.
So we know you so much for NBA and baseball. Give me a sport that you really enjoyed doing that you had no idea when you took the assignment.
Speed skating, because I actually I was up in West Allis for the trials back in 90. I want to say before the games in Albertville, and so I got to know Bonnie Blair and Dan Jansen a little bit through that, and then covering them at the Olympics was great, and having DJ win that gold medal in the 1000 in Norway. Was one of the great moments. I was able to call that on TNT, and it still ranks as one of the great sports moments I've ever experienced because it was so charged with emotion.
That's a man who knows his audience right there, Trevor. Love
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's Wisconsin as he
gets. Scale of 1 to 10, how much do you like cheese?
11.
Good. That's the right answer. Have you ever watched Kazam in its entirety?
No, but the book was unbelievable.
Right. I saw it on Broadway. The stage production is fantastic. It's crazy. All right. Last one.
Not going to happen.
Charles Shaq Kenny. If I need help on my English paper, which one am I going to?
I think you're going to Charles because he had some guys at Auburn who were really good at writing those.
Very good. Charles Shaq Kenny, how about if I need help in algebra, who am I going to?
You're not going to Shaq because all you got to do is Google the gas mileage theories of Shaquille O'Neal on how to best save gas, and you'll get an enormously entertaining take.
How about those three? Which one maybe can help me with geography?
Can you pick three other categories or three other possibilities for
okay,
help?
Who do I want in gym class as my partner?
I think you want Shaq. Yeah, right. I mean, look, Kenny's knees are going to prohibit him from being too effective in the gym, and Shaq is just with his brute strength. You go Shaq.
All right, we'll take Shaq. That's what I have. I like to know what's going on in people's lives. And maybe those guys have not. Maybe that's what I don't need for my academic decathlon team, whatever. But that's fine. They're really good in the job that they are required to do.
You're exactly right.
You are
right.
Really good in yours and making them look good. And we are all entertained. And I will continue to go back to ESPN and hear us bemoan the fact, why can we not? Although we've kept the lineup same for a couple years now. But why we can't seem to do what they do. And I think it goes back to the old thing as well. If they don't know what it is they're doing to make it work, I don't know that we can replicate it. But it is great television, which is really hard to do. So
you would do an unbelievable job at that. I mean, let me tell you, and you've been, it's more than 20 years now.
Yeah.
Doing SportsCenter. So it's an incredible run. And there's not a night that you're on, that you don't make me laugh and make me look up from whatever I'm doing because you are that good. And that, I mean, folks, it ain't easy. Certain folks make it look really easy. And John certainly does that.
Well, you're kind. And I'm going to get you in contact with my mother who has told me for 57 years and I'm 57. Don't laugh at him. He's not funny. So I appreciate that.
That's impossible.
Very nice. So thank you, Ernie Johnson.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on.
So, JA, for some time now, we've been doing once a month a little deeper roots deep dive into Wisconsin with our friends at Blaine's Farm and Fleet. It's time for another one. You ever play pickleball?
I have not. I belong to a club where we have the pickleball courts, It's sort of they do it kind of oddly enough, even though we have bad weather. It's kind of a winter exercise around here that people go out and do. But no, and maybe it's just the name that turns me off. It could be the thought of physical exertion that turns me off.
Well, definitely turn me off.
But you know, I'm kind of I'm not sure I'm a dill guy, but any, whatever. Yeah. I have not. Right. I am aware, but I have not.
Well, I have not either until now. I went down to the Milwaukee area and got a pickleball lesson and then legit played pickleball against one of the best, if not number one players in the entire world. He's from Wisconsin. His name is Zane Navratil. Got it right this time. Didn't get it right the first time down there. Hard name to say. Incredible pickleball player. I drank a lot of water. A lot of water. Took a puff on my little inhaler because I have asthma, a little out of shape. Great time. You'll love this. Zane Navratil on a Deeper Roots episode with Blaine's Farm and Fleet.
Real quick, did you break anything? Because you tend to get hurt getting off a chair.
Nothing broken.
Okay, good.
Definitely. I mean, there were some moments where. Thank you. Nothing broken. I'm good. Go.
Oh, you got it back. Attaboy.
Don't wheel it. Out.
Ah.
It was totally in. Farmers, brewers, hunters, packers, badgers, cheeseheads, neighbors. No matter what name we go by, we are bound together by our roots. These are the people, the stories, and the statriotism from inside Wisconsin. Welcome to Deeper Roots with Blaine's Farm and Fleet. Another episode of Inside Wisconsin's Deeper Roots with Blaine's Farm and Fleet. We are in Union Grove. Play a little pickleball today. Zane Navratil. Zane, thanks for having us down, man. This is really, really cool. A Wisconsin native, born and raised in Wisconsin, and at one point was ranked number one in the world in pickleball.
I was a tennis player. I won a couple state championships in tennis here in Wisconsin.
Where'd you go to high school?
The Prairie School in Racine. Cool. So Division II state champion a couple times and played college tennis at UW-Whitewater.
Boom. Go Hawks.
Yeah, absolutely. Go Warhawks. Love it. Tennis translates very well to pickleball. A lot of the top pro pickleball players have a tennis background. When I first started playing pickleball about almost 10 years ago, my dad said that he was playing pickleball. I thought it was a sport for old retired people. Got my butt kicked by some old retired people named Harvey, Lyle, and Al.
So you're still literally ranked in the top five in the world in pickleball. And I don't know that many people understood, like myself, that pickleball is a professional sport. What are we missing? How did pickleball become such an incredible thing?
Pickleball has been a professional sport since about 2020. Major League Pickleball is pretty cool because actually some of your more household names have invested into it. LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Gary Vee, and the reason why all these guys are investing in it is because they're all playing.
At one point, you were ranked number one in the world, and that comes with some responsibility. I learned that there is a potential that this is going to become an Olympic sport, yeah?
Yeah, so the 2028 Olympics are in Los Angeles, and the battle that pickleball is facing right now is getting international participation. So right now I think there's 75 or so international federations, which is right on the cusp of what you need to be an Olympic sport. So looks like there's a decent chance that it could be included in the 2028 LA Olympics.
What makes you super good at pickleball?
Just a lot of repetition. It's difficult still to get really good at this game, but you can be competent enough to play very quickly. And it's addicting. When you're 14 feet away and wailing a ball at somebody, there's an adrenaline rush. It's when you watch high-level pickleball, you'll see that players are hitting these really soft shots. And you look at them and you say, why aren't they just wailing the ball at each other? And so there's a very interesting rule in pickleball where you can't go into what's called the kitchen.
Where's the
kitchen? The kitchen is this green area. If you want to take the ball out of the air, if you want to hit a volley, you have to stand behind it. And I had the exact same question. Why are these guys hitting these soft shots to each other? That looks dumb. I'm just going to wail it. And you realize that you can't just do that. There's kind of a chess match that has to occur before you start wailing the ball at one another. So it's an interesting game of touch that very quickly goes into a game of power, which is something that really evens out age, gender, height, weight, all that stuff. So really anybody can get on the court with one another, and anybody can be pretty good at this sport.
I think it's probably time to hit the court and learn a thing or two from one of the best pickleball players in the world, Zane. I'm excited for this. And when I say excited, I mean terrified.
All right, let's do it. What you want to do is you want to hold the paddle like you're shaking hands with it.
Got it.
There you go. And we're almost like thinking about hitting this like you're tossing a beanbag, like a cornhole toss, right? There you go.
That was a whale shot.
That was a whale shot.
Oh boy. All right, how do you serve? And where do you serve from?
Yeah, so the point starts with the serve. The first two shots needs to bounce. So I'll serve to you. You have to let the first ball bounce, right?
And you need to let it bounce too?
And then I need to let it bounce.
All right.
And it's side out scoring, kind of like volleyball used to be. So you only score on your serve.
So I learned there's a serve that you did so well, they created a rule that said don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
If you spin the ball, I toss the ball up to myself with spin, it'll hit the ground and kick.
Zane. That's illegal, man. That's
holy. It is now.
All right, let's play. What do you play up to?
You generally play to 11.
All right, here we go. How many of those do you get before you get embarrassed? Just two? And then you get the ball?
Only one. You only get one serve. You want me to go 100%?
100%.
100%.
100%. All right, 3-0. It's fine. Don't get stumped, Trev. Don't get stumped. I felt really confident in that one too, just for a second.
That was a good hack. Oh, let's see that backhand.
Oh! You got that on camera? Good. I just scored against the number one player in the world. Here we go. I really want there to be a fault thing.
Go again, go ahead.
No, we're playing. Up to 11, right? Win by two.
Yes, sir.
Carry the 9.
Oh, no.
Okay.
You hate to see it. Oh, you got it. Nice shot.
Was that a point? No.
Not a point, unfortunately. Oh, he almost had it. He called the timeout. You get timeouts.
You get
timeouts,
right?
You get two timeouts.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, no. Nice. That's it. I'm retired.
Did that go in?
I think so. Nice shot. Nice. Give it a paddle tap. There
I
we
like
go.
It. Why are you hitting it right at me, Zane?
Match point.
This is the match point. Crap. Here I am.
All right, so after a match, give him a paddle tap. There you go.
Well, this was a lot of fun. Really fun to play against you and to learn from you, and really appreciate you not hitting me in the face with that.
I'm kind of bummed I didn't get the chance to hit you in at least the chest.
Yeah.
But I appreciate you having me on, and this is fun. This is very cool. I love to spread the word about pickleball. Oh
yes!
Attaboy.
We're done. Back it up. That's Zane Navratil.
We're gonna have to do this again.
Navratil.
Can I stand like 4 feet closer so that we look the same?
I have to get my inhaler first. Like, we definitely need to do that. I'm gonna have the fat guy wheeze going here pretty quick. My watch just told me, oh, we're doing a workout, huh? All right.
If I whale it. All right, that was a bad example.
Oh, heads up would be nice.
Dude, I do this as my job. I'm not gonna hit you.
I'm aware. I'm gonna get skinny if I play this.
Game, set, match. I'm still winded. That's it for episode number 10 of Inside Wisconsin's Deeper Roots with Blaine's Farm and Fleet. Remember, if you have a deeper root story that you'd like us to share, let's go. You just gotta let us know. We'd love to hear from you. Fill out the form on the website, farmandfleet.com/deeper roots. If you'd like to learn more about Zane and his professional pickleball career, head to his website, zanenavratilpickleball.com. Nailed it. He's got some great social media links as well. And as always, remember to like us on YouTube. Hit subscribe there, yeah? And if you're listening to the podcast side, go ahead, leave us a 5-star review. Until next time.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Remember to subscribe on YouTube, leave a review, smash the like button, just get with us.
Inside Wisconsin is brought to you by American Family Insurance. Aaron's Company, Blaine's Farm and Fleet, Capital Credit Union, Festival Foods, Quick Trip, Miller Lite, North Star Mohican Casino Resort, Prevea Health, and the University of Wisconsin-Platteville.
Sit down.